This episode of the Webcomic Beacon is brought to you by Family Bones. In 1990, Ray and Faye Copeland were put on trial for the murder of at least five men. They're the oldest American couple ever put on death row for serial murder. Written by the actual great-nephew of Ray and Faye, Family Bones tells the tale of Ray and Faye Copeland through the research of family and friends. Family Bones deftly blends a gothic tale with macabre horror. Please pick up your copies of the true crime graphic novel Family Bones, available everywhere where books are sold, and more at kingtractorpress.com.
Now broadcasting the Webcomic Beacon.
Chibudikin, you are the podcast's wacky neighbor.
She's the David Leisure of our lives. Like, she'll just sort of come in and go right to the fridge and eat something.
Anyway, we have a podcast to go.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yes, so welcome. Hello and welcome to episode 134 of the Web Comic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com. And if you're listening in the live chat room, I still haven't figured out the problem, so if it starts looping like crazy and it goes silent, that's because I turned it off. But of course you can wait maybe a day for the MP3 to come out, of course, but I try very hard to keep a live show, as we had had a live show almost since 2007 when we started. So anyway, I'm Fess of TooManyThingsToList.com, and with me, my co-hosts, Mark Savory of AutumnLake.com.
Well, hello there.
And Tanya Higgins of daisiesandshit.com.
Hello.
And with us this week, it's another featured guest, and we have DJ Kaufman of, well, djkaufman.com, among other things. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
It's going great here. How have you been doing?
Great. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Thanks for coming on. Should we call you DJ or Deej or Mr. Kaufman?
DJ's fine.
Well, all right.
Just don't call me late for dinner, right?
Oh, wow.
Hey-o.
My ex-husband used to use that line.
Oh, gosh.
Dump.
All right. There's a lot of things to talk about.
Is that the sound that you made when you signed divorce papers?
Well, only if you're the guy, because if you're
and everything.
Yeah. Oh, hey now. Just watch saying. It. I got nothing. I didn't ask for nothing.
That's because you didn't ask for nothing.
We're not going to go into that. We're going to do a podcast. We're going to interview DJ Kaufman.
We are. Awesome. There's many things going on. There's many things to ask of Mr. Kaufman here, and some of which we'll be getting to later in the show, because I know a lot of you have something on your mind about, but we'll go into that later. First off, we would like to start with what a lot of people know you by is Hero by Night, and this, of course, was involved with what it was a Hero by Night was originally an entry in this sort of like webcomic contest thing with Platinum Studios. Can you explain what that first process was?
Sure. Actually, it was originally planned. I was going to do it as a webcomic back in like 2003.
Okay.
So, you know, I was developing it behind the scenes, and then I got into working with my other comic, Your Mama, and that was, you know, going really well for me. So 2006 came along, and that contest came up, and I thought, well, this is a great, you know, they didn't even want superheroes, but I thought, well, I'm going to pitch this anyway. And it won. So, yeah.
And then, question is, okay, this is the comic that was on Drunk Duck.
Sure.
And Platinum Studios, I guess, owned Drunk Duck at this time, or was it just wherever you were posting it?
Okay. Yeah, I guess to give you a little bit of background, whenever I first signed up with Platinum, they didn't actually own Drunk Duck. Okay. The comic book challenge was right before they bought Drunk Duck. So I was a little bit, you know, like, I thought we were just going to launch. We actually had plans to launch Hero by Night on just herobynight.com. And when they said, well, guess what? We're buying this Drunk Duck, you know, and I was familiar with Drunk Duck. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, that's, you know, that's interesting. Like, why would you launch a full, you know, webcomic on, you know, like, this is your feature thing. But basically they wanted to, you know, at the time buying Drunk Duck, they wanted to say, oh, well, this big comic thing that won is coming in to kind of like boost exposure for Drunk Duck, which it did, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I was cool with that. And I always liked, you know, being amongst like real people. So, so, yeah, that's cool. But, yeah, that was definitely a strange mix because it was like, why are, you know, first they're doing movies and now they're suddenly, you know, mm-hmm. sort of in a way sponsoring Drunk Duck more than just owning it because they didn't really have too much to do with the running of it, you know, as you know, probably.
Yeah. And we've had Black Kitty on and one of the other girls, School Monkey, I think.
Yeah.
We've had them on the show before talking about Drunk Duck, and basically they were saying, yeah, they pretty much do their own thing, except, you know, they kind of has to they have to hassle them for a couple of things, I think, having to do with data access. But so right now I noticed that Drunk Duck doesn't even have Platinum Studios on there. It looks like it's owned by WowEO. Does Platinum Studios still own WowEO?
Yeah, that's kind of a complicated thing because, you know, Platinum owed a lot of people a lot of money, including their COO, Brian Altoony. And so basically what had happened was they just gave WowEO to Brian Altoony as money owed to him. You know, that's kind of how I understood it.
Oh, wow.
And then WowEO then, of course, purchased, in quotation marks, purchased Drunk Duck. So no money actually exchanges hands in these deals. I think that's important for people to know. When you hear that somebody bought Drunk Duck, no one actually exchanged money, you know, between WowEO and Drunk Duck. So
yeah. I know there were shares available for a while. I'm not sure if they're still on the market, though, but because they made Drunk Duck a public trading thing with shares and all that.
Yeah. And I mean, it's kind of a weird... It's sort of a weird business that, you know, that Brian dude is in. I mean, he specializes in that, coming into companies, getting them on the stock market for penny stocks. And, I mean, that's his business. He's not really interested in... last I heard, they were trying to... Actually, I just heard from another guy that emailed me and said, you know, what do you think? Should I take this job with WowEO? And they're looking for people to come in and actually run WowEO. So, I mean, he's a great spokesperson, but he's not the guy running the show, you know? So it's still the WowEO people.
Right. So obviously with talking about Hero by Night, before we go into more, tell us a bit about Hero by Night, you know, give us kind of the rundown of what it was.
Oh, sure. I mean, it was sort of like my love letter to the old school comics, like before, you know, the late 80s and 90s, right. Golden Age and Silver Age stuff. So I kind of wanted to take a lot of, cliche things and kind of bring them up to date and make them fun again and not as dark. So it was about a kid who found a secret lair of a superhero. It's sort of a standard origin story for a lot of those comics back in the day. Right. You know, they find a magical ring, blah, blah, blah. But I kind of wanted to make it sort of about, you know, the right choices that we make. Or are we making the right choices for the right reasons? And, you know, he had the choice to either sell this stuff in the lair or use the gear and things that were in there in the magic ring to save his friends and, you know, kind of become a hero. And then it sort of got into the whole, after he became a hero thing, you know, was it for his ego or was he making up for things that, you know, like he was a loser or something? But, yeah, so, I mean, it was a pretty big adventure. We put up the, of course, Drunk Duck ran the original journals at first.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to note, too, that that was never part of the original Platinum deal. I mean, the original Platinum deal, when you won that contest, was you get 4 issues and that's it. You know, they pay you for 4 issues and they support your work. But I actually came in there with this really passionate idea, like, hey, let's put up all this, you know, the old hero from the 50s. Let's put it all up. And I was actually able to negotiate, you know, different contracts with them.
Cool.
And to their credit, I mean... I'm probably one of the only guys that was being paid to produce, you know, my own webcomic, which is kind of cool.
yeah. it's pretty unusual, but definitely cool.
Yeah, so I mean, that's pretty much what it was in a nutshell. Was, you know, just really fun hero stuff rather than the dark, moody, you know, sex, you know, violence stuff that's been out there.
Yeah,
dwindling the comic book industry away.
And the reason that Hero by Night, you ended up stopping it. Do you want to clarify what happened? If you want to go into that.
Well, sure. You know, the pardon my kids in the background. they might yell or something. Or sure, we were doing it for, you know, 2 years full time. The web comic, and then we did a little mini like comics in between the series. But basically, that was our full time job for 2 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I can't really say how much I was making, but not only me, but the colorist, and then we brought on a writer as well. So, I mean, that was my full time. I wasn't doing any other work.
Wow.
No commission work, no freelance stuff. It was just a full time job. So, one day we just got the word, not to rehash the whole sorry affair, but one day we got, you know, word that the colorist hadn't been paid, mm-hmm. and I was still being paid. And then I thought, well, that's, you know, I can't, this guy couldn't keep coloring work that he wasn't being paid for. So that's when the door started to open a little bit. And we saw that, you know, basically behind the scenes, money had just dried up.
Wow.
And it wasn't really anybody's fault. At the time, it, you know, things were said to me and I got really bent out of shape. But I'm the one who chose to just stop it because we couldn't keep going. I had bills to pay and things, you know, it's part of a business when it's your right. full-time job. So it was actually a decision on our part. They, you know, to their credit, they wanted me to continue it. They wanted me just to hang in there. You know, I kept hearing, just hang in there. Everything's going to be cool. Hmm. But it wasn't. So you can only hang in there for so long.
Right.
And so it was a tough decision because, you know, I really loved doing it. But as far as the creative team, it wasn't fair to the colorist or the writer.
Yeah. And just to clarify a tweet I saw you tweet maybe last week, is it on the back burner once again?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, awesome. I mean, because there's been a big misconception that we aren't allowed to do it or mm-hmm. we need permission. And actually, you know, like I said, there are contracts and things that people aren't privy to. And, you know, Platinum never wanted me to stop. It would actually be great for them if I started it up again because it's like free exposure for them. Of course, they're not going to pay for it anymore.
Right.
It would just be like us doing it originally as planned.
Mm-hmm.
But so, yeah, we're talking about it. We have to... we have to get the colorist and the writer on board, James Patrick and Jason Embry. They want to do it. So it's just a matter of scheduling with all of our time and coming up with a decent plan. I'm not really interested in the way that it was done before, like a page every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. It's kind of too slow of a thing. I like when you get the full issues, you know?
So like a whole issue at once, you're saying?
Sure, yeah. Or something smaller, maybe like, again, going back to the old school comics, you know, a lot of old school comics were 16-page stories,
mm-hmm.
Or even 8-page stories in the gold, you know, the golden age time. So it would fit the comic pretty well to have, you know, 12 to 16-page issues come out every month, whether it's in PDF or some sort of digital format, or you know, a nice reader or something.
Yeah,
and we don't really know how we're going to monetize it. It's just it's all about getting back to having fun with it.
Going back to basics.
Yeah. Really, it's like, you know, it took a lot of those guys, you know, to even ask them if they're ready to do it. I mean, like mm-hmm. I said, you know, when it's your full-time gig, it's great. But when you have to, you know, I think Jason Embry's coloring like 6 or 7 books right now for Zenoscope. And, you know, for him to say, yeah, I still want to do it, and he knows that there's no page rate, I mean, that really shows that he, you know, he really loved the work. So
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, we don't know. There's talk of maybe starting it in January.
Okay.
But I want to start it sooner, but we'll see.
All right. Well, we'll certainly keep our eyes peeled out for that. And just to go into a couple more things before. Okay, just to go into a couple more things. Okay, now you said, you know, there's been other stuff that you've been working on, particularly after this. And I guess you pronounce it. I was going to ask you how you pronounce it, but you call it your mama.
And, yeah, it's your mama. Yeah.
And I'm looking at your moo mama. What?
Yeah, your mama.
Sure. And so this was, I guess, a kind of like a sort of slice of life, kind of talk about yourself, jokes in your life sort of thing?
Sure. That started out in like 1998 as a mini comic around the Pittsburgh area. And then just kind of, you know, casually as the web stuff grew, I started doing it as a web strip too. And then it originally was just making fun of stuff in the comic book industry, like Rob Liefeld, you know, back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Rob Liefeld jokes. And we helped that whole movement of Rob Liefeld jokes back in the day. but then it just got into pop culture and wackiness. And it's sort of been this ongoing thing that I've had since, you know, 97, 98.
Okay.
But I finally kind of put it to bed because it's really kind of bitter. And I'm not like that young, bitter guy anymore, you know? It's kind of hard to pretend like you're angry, you know? So, yeah.
I can see that. And then you also did something which I'm going to guess you kind of regretted a little bit. It's the We'll Draw Anything project.
Yeah, yeah. That happened right after the Hero by Night ended.
Right.
And I was like, the original idea was to learn to pencil faster on the Cintiq screen. Because I was really slow at penciling on it. I was good at inking, but penciling was like very slow. So I opened it up to the Your Mama readers and said, hey, if you pay $2, I'll draw anything you want. And that kind of ballooned, getting, you know, links from big bloggers and Metafilter and, you know, there's probably like 1,000-something orders that came in.
Yeah.
So it was, I did over 600 of them. So, and then I lost quite an archive of them, and then I figured out a way to that they were archived in Gmail. So I have them collected again. I do want to finish them all, but anybody that was really upset about their $2, I just refund it. So
$2, $2.
Yeah, I want my $2.
Yeah, I know. I put in a request a long time ago, and it's like, yeah, I'll wait. I think the problem was you didn't have like
the only
cut-off.
Reason he has you on the show today is asking about the
cut-off. Oh, shit. Oh no. PayPal. Yeah.
You probably would have done better if you like said, okay, submissions are closed for now, and then like, you know, cut it off.
Well, I kind of like. They all kind of came in at once. I mean, after the Metafilter and Seth Godin links, I mean, it just was crazy. I mean, I might have got 600 orders in one day. It's kind of hard to go, you know, I got to read, you know.
I suppose.
But I still want to do it. It's just a matter of time. And I'd like to put them all into like a cool coffee table book because it was kind of an interesting project.
That would be cool.
Yeah, it's just such a big. I mean, when you're dealing with 1,000 different illustrations and trying to organize all that stuff, because I originally thought it would be like 50 people. So yeah, that's just something that ballooned. You know, I kind of, you know, wasn't thought through very good, but it's still cool. So,
well, alrighty. Let's see here. I do have one more question before we go to break.
Sure.
Now, I don't know if this was done with your permission or not, but one thing that Platinum Studios was doing for a while, and you would see this on Drunk Duck a lot, where they made moving comics of, I think, of their winners, and Hero by Night was one of them. Now, what did you think of how they handled yours?
I never really liked motion comics, to be honest, but I thought, you know, the one thing I did think was cool, whenever the voice actors, I got to pick. Like, they gave me, like, a selection of voice actors. Not a very big selection, but they were like, check out these voices. And I got to pick, you know, who I thought would be, you know, better for each role.
That's cool.
So it's kind of neat to hear that, but I've never been a fan of motion comics. Okay. I'm sort of a traditionalist where I think that sequential art is just a... It doesn't need to be moving.
You know, if it's moving, it's sort of
something totally different. You know?
Right. But, you know, it can... easily, you know, tap another market, I suppose. But
yeah, I mean, then it's basically just a moving storyboard. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's not really an animation. It's not really a comic. It's something in between.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I've watched plenty of animated web comics, and I enjoy them. But for me personally, I wouldn't set out to do just in my taste. I like just standard comics.
Do you think it's how they're being done? I mean, maybe people just haven't figured out how to do them well yet.
Maybe.
Because it's kind of a new thing, really. I mean, maybe it's just not perfected yet.
I don't know. I always like it when there's sometimes like a touch. And it looks like we lost Deej. DJ.
I was going to say.
Only when I ask a question.
We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, DJ Kaufman.
Have news, questions, comments, or advertising inquiries? Transmit them to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or dial 1-320-310-0922.
This episode of the Webcomic Beacon is brought to you by Family Bones. In 1990, Ray and Faye Copeland were put on trial for the murder of at least five men. They're the oldest American couple ever put on death row for serial murder. Written by the actual great-nephew of Ray and Faye, Family Bones tells the tale of Ray and Faye Copeland through the research of family and friends. Family Bones deftly blends a gothic tale with macabre horror. Please pick up your copies of the true crime graphic novel Family Bones, available everywhere where books are sold, and more at kingtractorpress.com.
Why does it make you laugh?
I get this huge spike on the 16th of 1.4K.
Ooh, that's nice.
Page views.
But then still?
The orange line under it is flat. Those are the unique visitors.
Oh. Oh man, it looks like his call kind of dropped.
Oh.
But we'll keep trying.
It's live.
I like it where there's like a touch of animation that kind of loops. It helps when it's in it kind of loops because then, you know, it's easier to translate back into, you know, a print form if you ever do that. Honorary Boy does something a little bit where, you know, because it's kind of flash, so he'll do something a little bit fun. Hi, right, welcome back.
Yeah, what did you guys hang up on me here? What?
No, I think it just dropped.
It was fast. He wants that $2 so bad. I was gonna ask you, do you think it's because motion comics haven't been perfected yet? That, I mean, it's a fairly new thing. I'm not gonna ask that question again because obviously it's cursed.
I would say a perfected motion comic wouldn't it be just an animation, right? So I mean,
yeah.
Well, yeah,
that's what I would say.
Yeah.
We had a little looping problem with the broadcast. If it happens again, I'm sorry. I will have to stop the broadcast, but we'll see how it goes. But
I'll just add that I think that motion comics that I've seen are kind of like lazy animation. It's like the person doesn't want to go through all the steps of actually animating, you know. So it's kind of cool for artists, you know, like, hey, well, I could do this really quick. But yeah.
I think I've only seen one that I kind of liked was an android's eye view of a scene, and you know there were like a few little counters and stuff going, and you know maybe a little blinky rectal or something like that,
sure.
Kind of like the Terminator.
It's called a reticle, not a rectal.
actually, it is either way.
I used to
use them, but anyway.
All right. We'll go with rectal. Okay.
It's your podcast, so we'll go with rectal. Reticle.
All right. Reticle. I mean, I thought there's an eye on there. Anyway, moving on. Okay. There's one thing that we're gonna bring up that is controversial, kind of, I guess, in some circles. Just because I did talk with DJ on Twitter about it, and that's how I kind of booked him for our show. And that's he has a Cash for Cartoonists ebook and course or something like that available.
Order now.
And we were bringing up webcomics.com and I think the Half Pixel Group's book on, you know, how to make webcomics, and I suppose the question comes of a value of information and how does it compare and blah, blah, blah. So your pitch, sir, for this Cash for Cartoonists thing.
Cash for Cartoonists was sort of based on two things. One, I used to do an old blog where I would just give away things that were working for me with my webcomics when I was testing them, whether it was, and that was back in 2004, 2005. So I was testing like Google Ads and different ad networks. Mm-hmm. And then I got really big into, what pro bloggers were doing as well, because they were monetizing their sites. And I thought comics were much cooler than blogs, you know? So I thought, wow, you could use what they're doing to make more money with your stuff. So, I just used to share all that information. And I don't know, over the years, those sites got broken or whatever, WordPress database crashes. Right. And I've always kind of wanted to collect that information and put it up to date, not just with webcomics, but everything that cartoonists can do to increase money with their work. Because I talk to a lot of creators, whether it's in the comic book industry at conventions, and some people are just kind of like 3 feet from gold, they're on their way to doing something, but they don't exactly, they quit right before, or they don't know exactly the strategies to do. They're not very good businessmen. Mm-hmm. So this is sort of putting it all in there and adding strategies. And it's not just an informational book of here's some information, like a artist market book. There's actually strategies and marketing things in there. I don't know if any of you have seen it, but.
I have the free preview. But sure. I'm a poor college student, so not quite yet. But I was impressed because I know that just by the preview, I know a number of really amazing cartoonists who make just no money because they're good at what they do and they're horrible with marketing.
Right. Hi there. That's why you see stick figure.
Yeah.
Stick figure comics making a living.
Yeah. If I could draw better, I'd be one of those, but I
you draw
what you mean.
Fine, Mark. The problem is you don't get off your ass.
I know some people though that, they have a great range in drawing. They would mm-hmm. have no problem doing commercial anything from commercial illustration to their own print comics. But their marketing skills are literally, looking through the newspaper for gigs, just like you would if you were looking for a dishwashing job. And it's depressing to see people who could be doing so much with what they're good at, and they just don't know the first step.
Right. Or a lot of times I would be at comic conventions and with Hero by Night stuff or whatever, and people would bring up their portfolios to me and say, look through my portfolio. And I would just tell them, I'm not the one to critique you and say if your work is good or bad. You'd be better off putting this stuff online. And why are you still going to conventions and doing the way that it was done in the 90s, or even the 80s? You want to put that stuff online, or even better, launch a webcomic to showcase your style and your skills and show editors that you can actually produce on a regular basis, So a lot of people just don't get it.
On the site you show basically a list of 14 things, and even still with people that have that, you can get a pretty good idea with some of even what you just kind of list here. Of course, you go into in depth, and a lot of it's not webcomic specifically related or comic related. It's art related. But as far as there's webcomics.com and there's the how to draw webcomics. How does it compare? Is it particularly your webcomics approach to things like that?
Well, I've never read the How to Draw Webcomics book, but I've heard it's really good, and I send people to it. But I think from what I've gathered, even from members of webcomics.com, that Brad and those guys are more about the craft. And sure, they show you how to do a lot of the business stuff too, but they're more about the craft of comics, making your comics better so that you will sell, more of your books or merchandise or build your audience. And, mine's more of a commercial thing. Web comics is just one little thing. And I think I even say in the preview book, and especially in the bigger, the one about niche comics, is that it's a harder road to go to make money with your web comics. You know, if you're looking to make money with your cartooning or illustration, that's different than webcomics. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, but with cartoons and illustration, you could be making more. If your goal is to make more money drawing and using your skills, you could totally be making more money doing spot illustration or whatnot. That's why, you know, again, back in the 50s and 60s, a lot of comic book artists that were slaving away for a meager page rate left the comic book industry and got into marketing and commercial art. Because they would make more money on a poster than they would doing a year's worth of comics. I mean, absolutely. So it's, that's kind of the goal. So, yeah, to answer your question, I think, to me, webcomics.com is more about the craft. Mm-hmm. And this is totally a separate thing. This is laser beam focus on business and, you know, increasing your earnings.
Yeah.
One reason why I don't subscribe to webcomics.com is that I'm not currently doing any sort of webcomic in which I'm, you know, it's just hobby stuff for me right now, and the Webcomic Beacon's the most professional thing I have going for me right now. Also, I'd like to claim plausible deniability for because I have my own information and that I would share freely and whatever, and I can be like, no, I didn't rip it off from you, I don't even subscribe to you, sort of thing.
Right.
So, you know.
Well, information is, you can get information anywhere. If you look hard enough, you can gather all this stuff over years or, you know, talking to other artists or whatever.
Or by having several guests on a podcast and amalgamating their information into one little free little tidbit, which I'm planning on. But it's, you know, mostly it's website design with me. But but I'm looking at this thing and it says, It's not just the ebook. There's a cartooning career coaching service,
right? Yeah,
which explains the price why it is. I'm guessing,
sure,
because that's something that a lot of people are, I guess, bitching about.
Well, wow. You know, if you're gonna bitch about just the price, like I said, the same people. I saw one guy say, "Oh man, I can't buy your book for $47." But then he went and bought Red Dead Redemption for like $60. But that, you know, hey.
Well, that is a really good game.
That's a good game. It is a good game. But yeah, coaching, I've always kind of liked to do one-on-one. Mm-hmm. Like someone, because everybody's different. There's no cookie cutter approach. One guy might want to do sketch cards and he just hasn't, or art cards, and hasn't really figured out a way to target a market or make a demand for his work.
Right.
And it's kind of fun to talk to someone one-on-one and be like, well, why don't you try this? And then they go, well, I tried this and this worked for me. And then we just kind of go back and forth and perfect what he's doing.
That's pretty cool.
Or she's doing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's a...
I mean, I wish I would have had something like that whenever I... Not when I was starting out, but when I was getting more serious about making money with my work. I wish I could have had, you know, a professional kind of telling me, you know, well, don't try this. You know, I've been down this road. You know, these are the pitfalls. You know,
it's a mentoring situation. I don't think I've ever heard anyone bitch about mentoring fees when they were going into any sort of, you know, publishing or advertising work where, you know, mentors are typically spread out.
I've actually had some mentors of mine in like the marketing world tell me that I'm crazy for selling it that cheap. But I'm like, you know, I'm like, hey, I'm not going to sell this for $300 to a cartoonist. You know, I kind of want to get this information out to people, you know,
right.
But, but yeah, I mean, it would be kind of wacky to charge what, some of the marketing people online want to charge for this. So,
well, at least it's not $2.
Yeah, I learned my lesson there.
Yeah,
there is a value there. I mean, I could see that as a good investment if you're mm-hmm. serious about illustration. If you're serious about getting into that that field, that $47 is really not a lot of money.
Oh yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Or if you know you're good and you just want to make some cash to even just support like a webcomic that you're doing for fun or whatever else.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
We all got to eat. And
well,
yeah, I noticed right away in the preview there are different avenues. There were avenues there that I hadn't thought of, and
right. That's
a big deal.
Yeah, that's why I sort of call it like a formula. Like you can take that list of ideas, and you might go, it's like a recipe book. You could say, well, I'm going to try these three things. in concert with my webcomics and see if it works through that. I'm going to try to sell more art cards or original art to people, to my readership. Or you can, you know, just mix it up. You could try different things in different markets. An illustrator might actually try an illustrated blog of some theme idea. He might not have thought about doing a webcomic, and he'll use that to gain more attention online for his work, you know?
I have a sort of a theory, a working theory on success for webcomics in general, and I would like to run at least a brief model by you and see what you think of my angle.
Okay.
Now, it's basically five parts, and I'm not going to go into this. They'll be self-descriptive mostly, but on top of this, I'm throwing on devotion and diligence. Because without that, well, you might as well not even be bothering. But my five are skill, frequency, as in, you know, how often you update, exposure, connections, which could also be making your own luck sort of connections. And then my fifth one is random X factor, because I want to say sometimes you just have no control over what happens.
Luck, then, right?
Yeah. Well, no, see, because they've done studies on luck, and they determined that people that feel they're more lucky are more lucky versus people that feel they're unlucky. It's a matter of making connections and saying yes to things that, where you create your own luck, your own chances.
Yeah. Well, what is your definition of success? Because I know some people that don't even give a crap about making money with their work, but they're hugely successful in there, you know?
But I guess my definition of success would be... If we're not looking at it from a monetary standpoint, would be from a recognition standpoint, a recognizability standpoint, a sort of like maybe a following or, you know, basically, hey, people know who I am and they like my stuff.
Right. Well, you definitely have to have the passion to do it. Oh, but yeah. Sometimes people take that passion and they're like, ah, screw that. I'm not going to work for those big guys. I'm legit, you know. Like, I'm not going to pour myself out and make money.
I'm an artist,
yeah. And you can forget about skill. You could cross that one off, because while skill's important, come on, you've seen some webcomics that are, or even comic books that are pretty successful that lack a lot of skill.
That's why I say it's a combination. I think of it as a big pie chart. If skill isn't helping you, then it's something else of that pie.
Yeah, so frequency and exposure, I would say, you know, it's about your storytelling, whether you're drawing stick figures or whatever. You're telling a compelling story. You have to be a good storyteller.
Yeah, the narration.
Right, and you got to be out there all the time, whatever. Not annoying, not spammy, but,
right.
You know. Yeah.
Present.
Yeah, and you make your own luck. As far as the X factors, there are no X factors. You're constantly making your own luck.
Well, true, but... You never know. You can't control if you're going to get boing-boinged for one.
Well, there are ways to control that. But, I mean...
Is that in the book?
Actually, maybe it is. Yeah.
It might be.
I mean, there are ways. If you build... think about it. If you build up a network of people surrounding your work, and you really wanted to get boing-boinged, I'm sure you could. I'm sure that something...
That just sounded wrong.
Yeah. You're going to get boinged, the more your network grows, the more people you might actually have someone at Boing Boing that likes your work.
I suppose, yes. So, well, it works for me.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see if there's anyone in the chat room that's been coming up with. Oh, they're talking about Godwin's Law.
Oh, that
which
was...
applies to bringing up Rob Liefeld in comic-related conversations. Oh, okay.
I have a question for you. You're a cartoonist and illustrator. Are there artists that you look up to, that you recommend, that you've followed over the years, that you point to or point people to? Like, for me, it's somebody... Nobody listening will probably know who I'm going to say, but Charles Gere or Peter Spear. He's wonderful... children's book illustrators. Is there anybody like that that you recommend?
I mean, one of my biggest, the biggest influence on my work which you might not be able to see in my style, would be Jack Kirby. And everybody knows that, you know, that name, but I liked him more for his energy and his devotion to the craft than I did anything else. Maybe not his art style as much. Definitely. I'm more of the person to point out people from the golden and silver age, the people that really had a discipline for the craft. People like Joe Simon, who would stay up. I mean, those guys would stay up all night long. They would put their kids to bed, and their working hours were from like midnight to 8 a.m. Go out, get a cup of coffee, sleep for 5 hours, and then they were back at it. You know, so I mean, that's cool to me. That's what I like. And so modern day people are like Greg Capullo, who drew Spawn for a while. Yeah. He's a machine. I love that guy. I mean, he's like the Norman Rockwell of comic books. His caricatures are outstanding. The detail is insane. I recently had a opportunity to digitally ink, try out for inks on the Haunt book from Image. And I got to ink 2 pages of his work, and it took me forever. It was really cool to be able to be asked to ink over that stuff. But I was like, what did I get myself into? I mean, I spent so much time inking his work. It was insane. So, those are the guys that really get to me.
They already picked somebody for that, or are you going to hear you from?
Yeah, actually, they've got one. I forget the guy's name, but he's one of the best inkers around.
Oh, okay.
And they brought him on because they were late on the book, I guess, from, you know, the inking taking so long.
McFarlane
was kind of slow, of course. But, I'm on their list for doing some projects next year. So I never really thought I'd be jumping into doing digital inking, you know, on a Cintiq or whatever. But yeah, I'd be down to do some stuff for them.
Well, very cool. Well, the best of luck with that, and of course your ebook and Hero by Night, all that stuff. And I know it's getting close to, you got to take your kid to a soccer practice or something, a game.
Football game. Yeah, he's already there. I just have to kind of show up and cheer him on.
Be dad.
Show up and be a dad.
Show up and be the dad. Yeah.
Well, already. DJ, I thank you once again for coming on the show. It's been great having you. And
cool.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me on, and, you know, anything you guys need ever, just give me a buzz.
Cool.
Sounds very good. Thank you very much, and enjoy the game. Hope your son wins, of course.
Thanks. They're sort of like the Bad News Bears of baseball.
Awesome.
They never win. So.
Oh, well. Well, that is all. You can check out DJ Kaufman's stuff at djkaufman.com, or, of course, well, actually, go there. You'll find everything.
Sure.
And we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to be... Well, it's news, and then we'll be done. That was Superhero by Straight Outta Junior High from MusicAlley.com by Mevio. Looking at the Project Wonderful ads on webcomicbeacon.com, this Sunday is brought to you by Cash for Cartoonists, which you can find out more at mimisync.com. And of course, that is, you know, we've had DJ Kaufman on the show talking about that already. And of course, this week we do have a sponsor, and it is for a comic called Family Bones, and it's based off of a true story, actually, told from the accounts of the I think it's the great nephew of a Faye and Ray Copeland that killed like a dozen people or something like that. So go ahead and check that out at kingtractorpress.com. All right, so we got news. We got news. Actually, not really.
There's lots of stuff that went on.
Let me check the emails real quick and see if we have any notices. Oh, I don't see any milestones in this email because somebody emailed the wrong email. Hang on. But I know that Girly has ended.
Yes, indeed.
So you can find that at Girly with 3Ys.com. Go-Girly might still work, I'm not sure. But after, wow, a couple of really, really, like, really tall updates, you know, basically several page updates, it's finally come to a close. It was a little steamy, the last few updates. If you've been following it, so probably not safe for work, though, you know, that's kind of a chance you take with Girly here and there. You know, looking.
It depends on where you work.
Well, yeah.
If you're working in porn, Girly is fine. There's nothing wrong with it at all. If you work at a preschool, probably not.
Not so good.
Use your discretion. But it was a brilliant ending, and I love Josh Lesnick, and I wish him the best.
Absolutely. We do have another milestone, Galaxian, from Tara Talon, who sent it to the wrong wrong email address. At galaxiancomics.com. It's turned 4 years old this past Labor Day. Does anybody else have any other milestones?
Yeah.
Do you want to say it? Go ahead.
TinyGhosts.com has their 5-year anniversary. Just last week, 5 years.
I love Tiny Ghosts. I think Tiny Ghosts is a beautiful example of how something very simple can be very profound.
So there.
Well, already. What I was going to say is Saturday Morning Breakfast Cereal, 2000.
Oh, yeah.
2K. And that's another one that I absolutely adore.
They still been updating? I thought they... I'm thinking of Breakfast of the Gods.
I'm like, well, only every day.
Yeah, that's very, very different. Okay.
Already. I'm a big fan of SMBC. So.
Well, congratulations.
Irreverent humor in a single panel.
Let's see here. We do have.
Oh, there's more.
Just to let everybody know, we have Alex Helberling as our official. Correspondent of the Webcomic Beacon, who was at Intervention Con 2010. I can post a link to her blog con report from the main site. Look in the show notes for a link to her con report. It's fairly in depth, and she's gotten some interviews, and we're going to be working on getting those recordings to me, and it's quite possible I'll upload them as a separate episode or something, depending on how I get them and how they're formatted. We'll see, but they will be available at some point as soon as I get them and work on them. So there's that. And of course,
there's three more milestones now in the
Brightest
part one ended. Sorry, do I keep cutting you off?
A little bit. See, these people are supposed to send their emails to us, and that's how they get there. But anyway, we'll go ahead.
This is just John offering the news, basically. They're not his sites.
Yeah, that's okay.
Brightest Part 1 ended. A new one starts in 2 weeks. That's at the at brightestcomic.com. Effort Comics, Chipper Whale, which is apparently also not safe for work. It is 100 pages.
It is not safe for work, as I've discovered after following a safe story for a while. I was like, holy crap, green boobs.
Green boobs. Orion ladies. Wopsy Square hit 2,000 pages as well at wopsysquare.com.
Willows Grove at 400 comics at willowsgrove.com. The Space Between has hit 100 comics at jellybeansniper.net/spacebetween. And somebody, Short Pants Romance at shortpantsromanceonline.com has hit 100 comics. And this isn't really a milestone, but Ardra is back. It's updating. We are relaunching. I might have mentioned this last time. John Peters of Gypsy Girl Press is doing the inks. I'm doing the coloring, which I find is very, very difficult when you have an inker that's used to black and white or a different stylized type of art, and I have to infer where lines are because I can't bucket fill. So the one that's supposed to be for tomorrow is taking me a little bit longer than I thought, and I just started.
Can I just say how sad it would be though to have inks as lovely as John Peters and then bucket filled color?
That
would be.
I bucket fill with the base color, then I do the shades normally. Oh. But now I have to basically go through and draw a lot more in color. But you know, it's I'm learning.
Are you learning out of that DC coloring book?
No, I'm learning from Chibutykin, basically, who's professionally colored comics before, and she's like, no, don't put black in there, don't put black in the color. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but
she recommends the digital coloring book, or did it PangoCon.
Well, all I'm basically doing is like I'm free, so I had the first page of Alardra all colored, and. And then she's like, no, take the black out, you know, find another way. So I had to basically redo the entire page. Well, basically, I spent like 10 hours one day going through redoing all the colors, trying to find the right balance. And I just could not find the right grays and browns, mostly the browns. I couldn't get the hair right without adding some black. So
I can just picture Chibutykin now looking at you like she was all Master Poe going, find another way, grasshopper.
Well, she has the mantra, the color wheel is your friend. The color wheel is your friend.
I tried the color wheel. It didn't help. I have the CMYK sliders. That's as good as I'm. You know, that helps.
Rode over me. Oh.
So I basically gave myself a rule, no more than 30% black. And mostly in the browns, I don't think I went over 20%. And in the grays, I went up to 30%.
It's the wrong color wheel. She's not talking about the color chooser. That's not a color wheel.
No, it's the same. It's the same. I'm using CMYK, the sliders, and I can find colors just as easily like that. It's a lot easier finding colors I want that way than using the color wheel.
That's not what she means. A color wheel is an artist tool that shows you the contrasting and comparison colors and how you make different. No, it's not a slider or a color.
What are you talking? The color wheels that I've been finding don't tell me any of that. It's a rainbow of color in a circle. It doesn't help. It doesn't help at all. Unless there's some sort of like magic tool tips that I'm missing from this rainbow circle of color. It's not helping me. And then when I can't eye drop that thing and get the color because Photoshop will automatically add black to everything.
The point is that the color wheel helps you with color theory, and that once you've learned color theory,
then
you're more capable. Yeah, walk to an art store and buy a color wheel. They have them.
I understand.
The rainbow connection. Fest.
I understand mixing colors and getting this and that, and I have a better understanding of the CMYK sliders because they also have little fading. They also show you the colors when you're sliding. If you add a little bit more, this is the sort of color you're going to be getting to. And I've done.
I know just what's going to happen. You're going to find out that you've been looking at an HTML hex code chart instead of a color wheel.
The problem is that what you're talking about is how to mix those colors. Like what a color wheel tells you is how much green and how much yellow to add. That's not what color wheels do. Color wheels assist you with color theory, which talks about which colors work where with which other colors. Yeah. It's color theory is what you need help with. Do a Google for color theory, not color wheel.
I did
wheel.
Do a Google for color theory, and I understand the concepts and complementing colors and opposing colors or...
She's right. The color wheel is like the slide rule. They went to the fucking moon with the slide rule. You need a color wheel.
I get it. I understand that. And with shadows, you know, I can look at the first page of Archer. That's me just messing with sliders. And it, the only problem I really had finding a substitute color, which I came really close to finding all the correct as close to the correct color as possible using just the sliders. And that's fine. I can get that. And with shading, I did a lot better job of shading on that, too. The only thing I couldn't get was a brown that was the color brown that I actually wanted. I understand that bright greens and fuchsia just do not exist in CMYK, but that's for other things. With Ardra, it's the brown hair! I had to add black to get it.
There's I've never no actually around. Messed around with that, so I guess I can't really say myself.
I spent at least 6 hours finding browns!
I'm a bucket fill guy, and...
You actually can't get a very rich brown without using black. It is possible. It is quite possible.
Okay. Well, every single brown I got was either faded or dull.
See, and that's it though. Bob Ross did it all the time. And the way you warm up browns is with red.
Happy little pixels.
I couldn't.
you warm browns with red.
I couldn't get the browns. I got maroon.
That's too much red.
I couldn't go any more than that. Yellow. Yellow was at its maximum.
You need blue to get maroon. So where did you get blue into a brown? How did you do that?
Maroon is brown and red.
No, it's not. That's not maroon. There's actually a little bit of blue.
No, no. Don't you remember the old? No, there's the old Fred Penner joke or whatever. What happened when the train carrying brown paint crashed into the train carrying red paint? They became marooned.
But he's not.
I don't know if you're aware of this, but the joke may not have been technically accurate. You do actually need a touch of blue to make a maroon color.
Well, there's going
to
be already a little bit of blue in the brown.
But no.
But it's mainly brown and red.
Thank God. You know what? I have faith that it's going to be beautiful and it's going to be good art. It's going to be good color. And
yeah, well, I'm using a little bit of black brush. Unless somebody can come here and show me, because I've been looking for brown for 6 hours and it was not. I couldn't. It's like it stagnates.
Wrong.
CMYK stagnates in an advancing order to get brown. And yellow was at 100%. I couldn't go any higher than that to get any richer of a thing without having too much red or too much blue into it.
Yellow doesn't make it richer. That's not what yellow is going to do. Like, okay, John Peter said, brown is the result of mixing equal amounts of complementary colors. Complementary colors
color
are something
wheel.
That you have to see on your color wheel. It's going to show
wheel.
You complementary colors. And
it's
if you eat, if you put
wine.
In the equal parts of those complementary colors, you're going to get a brown. And you can choose between a cool brown or a rich brown or a warm brown based on which complementary colors you use. This is color theory.
Yeah, I understand that, but...
What?
Okay. No,
apparently
no, no.
not! You're
no,
just
no,
screaming
no,
about
no,
how you can't get brown without
no,
black.
No, no, no. Okay.
A nice little cloud up here by the mountain.
So, when you print...
All those birds will fly.
No.
So,
man, happy little...
Yeah, you know what? You're going to do a great job. We have Bob Ross in the background talking about happy trees.
No, 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 okay. When you print, you only have CMYK, right?
And I understand that.
Correct. No? Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
There's a little sniper in there. Isn't that that is?
Which
happy little sniper in there, but we've got our happy little Kevlar vest on, so he can't get us. Be all right. Just add a little brown and maybe a little
you
blue.
You do only have CMYK, yes. However,
okay. No. Let me finish. This is my little thing. You only have CMYK, which means that you can only work with C, M, Y, and K, digitally. Yeah, I'm not sitting here with pigments where I can mix and choose at will. I'm not going to open up four different layers and try to somehow blend them together.
YK, you have every available color in the fucking universe.
I know, but I can't.
Every color is there.
I was told to add red and green. Well, guess what? Yes. There's no red and green in CMYK, and I can't adjust one with
you can make red and green with CMYK. Yes, you can.
No. I can either make green or I can make red. I can't make both of them on the same brush.
They say
brush.
We can't make brown.
But that's the point.
I can't make them both on the same brush. No, I can't make them both on the same brush. If
it's true. Yes, you cannot make green and red in the same thing. That is true. I understand what you're saying. What you're trying to figure out is how you apply that color theory to CMYK, and a color wheel will not help you with that. And I understand that.
Yeah, and therefore, a color wheel does nothing for me.
Okay, calm down. Calm down. What the color wheel will help you with is in knowing how to put those colors together without blacks. That because the color wheel gives you a better idea of where those sliders need to be in those ranges. You know that this slider needs to be more of a green range, this slider needs to be in more of a, you know, it'll give you a better concept of where to put those sliders to get those colors without using black.
I love this. Tributikin in the chat room says somebody give Fess a brown paper bag, but it's brown.
Okay, you know, it's like, okay, I can understand that, and maybe I just haven't found the correct color wheel, and I don't know why fucking Photoshop doesn't have a color wheel anywhere.
You know what? Here's a great idea. This is straight out of science class. No, this really helps. Find a color-based brown marker in the color that you like. Then you go and you get a piece of toilet paper. You put a little drop of water on it and let that bleed in, like make a brown mark, let the water bleed through that brown marker, and what it's going to do is it'll separate the pigments that make brown, and you will see in crystal clear on the paper, you will see the three or four different colors that they use to make the brown. You can then choose that from CMYK because it's the same fucking ink process.
What are you talking about? That exactly. you just used pigment to try to tell me how to color in light.
No. Because the pigment will show you that the pens are made with CMYK, okay? So when you put the color down,
paper. Never mind. Yes,
and
right.
Eyedropper that sucker.
No, no, no. Like, well, you can't eyedropper it because Photoshop will automatically add black to it. It will.
Who will know?
I mean, I can't tell Photoshop not to use black and find that color. It's not. It just doesn't work. You think it? It could be an option somewhere. No, it doesn't exist.
But
I've been working with MAD where these browns show up in the slider scale, and I will give somebody, I'll post the color. I'll say, find me this color in CMYK, and I'll give you like $5 if you can give me this exact color in CMYK, and you give me like the percentages. But
hey, Tributikin, you just made $5. Take his color and make it without black. Oh, Onyx will do it.
Actually, I'm gonna get Tributikin on the show to talk about color at some point.
That's probably a good idea. It sounds
always
like
good.
Because you know, partly why I'm ranting is apparently people like it when I'm frustrated.
Do they really?
Really? Do they?
Okay.
Really?
Yeah. I know. I said
I think they have me to thank for that most of the time.
Yeah, but CMY is pigment. Yeah, I was just getting all flustered and I was being confused. Yes. Yeah, I said I wanted you offered to come on the show to talk about color.
Oh, Fezzy.
How about we let Fess calm down for a minute before he hyperventilates?
In any case, I'm very comfortable with using up to 20% black in my brown hair. It should be fine in color compared to how many people probably don't spend this much time trying to figure out. I don't think a lot of people do worry about that when they make their comic.
Well,
but
the thing is that you really should.
Yeah,
You really should. Black is going to muddy anything, and it does take a lot of the fullness out of colors. It dampens everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it, not in the don't blind you kind of way. Kind of it dampens faded. It in a boring kind of way. Yeah. It's like
I
taking
should learn
a beautiful
how to do
rainbow
it.
And washing it in mud and then putting it out. And there's no need to do that to your colors, especially when you're dealing with different screen settings and you know that different people are going to have. There's no need. Don't start out bad. Start out with the best that you can, and then you know that everyone's going to have the best experience they can.
And I'm a bucket fill kind of guy, so I should really learn to do it the right way since I just converted to CMYK recently.
Well, I'm only a bucket fill if they're, you know, when I draw my comic, I connect all my lines so I can quickly color it because PSI doesn't need to be more than flat colors right now. And even if I did want a shadow and highlight, at least I got the bases where they are, and then I can just easily go in, you know. It's a matter of efficiency and quickness.
Because someday I would like to see some Autumn Lake stuff printed up properly.
Oh, yeah.
I think it would be nice, yeah.
But anyway.
But that
we're going to let Fest calm down now.
That needs, you know, you need to get off your ass. That's the only thing. And I would definitely look at getting your Where's the Springtime Robin book printed in either Comics Press with an X or Kablam. I would definitely take a look at their custom sizes.
Honey,
that's going to be a lot cheaper than Lulu, really. Cheaper than Lulu.
Really? Okay, no. Just stop.
What?
I have to convert it all to CYMK.
I'm having real issues with the suggestions of print on demand for new artists.
Well, he's using Lulu right now. I'm saying projects. They're better than Lulu.
No. That's fine. What I'm saying is that you're not necessarily doing yourself a favor by doing any sort of print on demand. The price is automatically too high the second you do print on demand.
Certainly
in color. And I am
black
finding
and white's okay,
a number. I'm finding a number of printers you can get a great deal from that are maybe 25 is their, you know, their print limit. And that's nothing. You can print 25 books for, you know, very little money out there and actually make some money back. I'm really starting to recommend more and more and more to people to ignore the print on demand. It's really not a good model unless you're already kind of established there. I don't think people are making the money that they want because unless I know your name, I'm not necessarily going to spend an extra $5, you know, on a book that you might have been able to sell for $5 less and actually made more profit than you through print on demand anyway.
Well, true,
especially these days where, you know, economics-wise, probably get a better deal than...
Small-time people are not going to be able to do that, though, you know? It's at least, you know, at least they can have something out there, and people do sell their print-on-demand stuff. You know, it's not, you know, a lot of... Most of these people, it's nice to have something printed. And
I've watched it happen. I've seen somebody who's had something on print on demand for a year. They've had two or three sales and gotten their, you know, $1.50 for each sale.
That many?
Because they wanted to make it, you know, affordable. They wouldn't get that much back.
That's
go ahead
totally
and
the story
swallow
of what
it.
I
spend $100 or even less printing 25 of whatever they were selling on print on demand and triple not only their sales but what they got back from it. They were able to mark it up enough to where they actually made money back. $1.50 here and there.
We'll have to do a show on printing, and we'll need to get people on that know where to go for offset printing that's not going to make you have to pay like $1,000 for, you know, in all these minimums. That's the thing. The minimums are usually way too high for, like, the average person to do it. And you can also say, you know, well, wait until you have the audience. But sometimes you want to have something to show for. Even if you don't make that much of a profit on it, you can at least get yourself out there. I don't think you need to outright avoid.
Don't wait until you have an audience.
Yeah,
don't wait until you have an audience. You can get an audience by printing it out. And it's not necessarily offset printers. There are digital printers that aren't print on demand that do magazine quality work, that do really good work for very cheap.
Yeah. Well, I still have plans to do... get something printed up with Comics Press and Indie Planet, and maybe the first, you know, mini of Ardor or something like that. Just to do a side by side comparison of the quality, and with proper coloring, as proper as I can get anyway. And
that's
just
a good idea.
Take a look at what the quality is, because you know a lot of people that are doing print on demand. I'm not, I you know, probably aren't coloring as properly or as most CMYK efficiently as they should be, which could also be a reason for it. You know, it's something to look into is all I'm saying. And I don't think print on demand is something to outright avoid for everybody. But, you know, we want to.
Here's an idea. A new project for FESS. Why don't you do that? And then, you know, document it step by step by step so people can see the process of what you're doing and the what's the scientific term, the approach or whatever.
Scientific method.
Maybe that's not the right word, the approach. But anyway, you just show them step by step what you're doing, how you're comparing them, what the parameters are, et cetera, so on and so forth.
Well, I plan to do it, but I need to have a product first. But we need to do a show on that. So if you're listening to this and you have experience with, let's say, like what Tanya was talking about, I definitely want to get you on the show and talk about the knowledge that you have and maybe some ideas of how to go about this with getting something, maybe a better print, but maybe also avoiding like the $1,000+ that you may have to initially spend on, you know, because that is a factor. And if you can get like, you know, even 50 or 100 books, you know, it's just something to start out and get a feel for, whatever that, you know, the variety. I want to look at possible options for people. And that is a show I want to put together. But in any case, I can say if you're looking to print in the future, scan big, 600 DPI for your black inks. Save that as a master file. And color in CMYK as best as you can.
Yeah.
And then save that in a PSD without flattening it so you can go back and make corrections if you need to. Text, as I'm told, should have no C, M, or Y in them and be all K because it'll be more crisp. Though you won't get as, quote-unquote, a black look because all the color won't be in it. It will look a little bit grayer, but you should get sharper text, as I am told. And this is Melissa telling me this.
You won't end up with a fuzzy edge.
Yeah. No. So, So that's basic quick stuff. We'll have another episode on this hopefully in the future, hopefully soon. I'm hoping to get some more shows scheduled up in the coming weeks. We'll see what's coming down the pike, of course. But that's all for this show. It was great, and I hope you enjoyed DJ Coffin. I hope you enjoyed me ranting like a madman. And this has been Fess of Fessworks.com.
This is Tanya of DaisiesandShit.com.
And this is Mark of AutumnLake.com.
Thanks to you all for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.
That's all for now. Tune in next time at WebcomicBeacon.com.
Oh, we totally forgot it's Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Oh, argh.